Hi, this is Keith, your host.
Wait a minute, you ain't fixing to hit me up for a loan, are you?
And it's time for the Retro Radio Podcast.
Something should be done to help him.
Well, thank you. The Retro Radio Podcast, the Internet's best-kept secret source for your favorite old-time radio shows.
Simply devastating.
Always family-friendly, always good, clean fun.
You must explain it to me sometime.
It's the place where new tech meets old tech and likes it.
Oh, you mad, impetuous fool, you!
Now located at retro-otr.com. Visit us today and leave us a comment.
Now, why didn't I think of that?
Email us feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Hey, everyone. This is your host, Keith, once again. And it seems like I have been a little bit slow at times to make these retro original podcasts where I have my own little voice here talking to my listeners. I found on an old computer that I had some files that I thought I should have, but I found some that I forgot that I had, and I think what I'm trying to do is put together a patriotic type of show today, because this is the 4th of July. Being the summertime, I do know that people tend to be outdoors more and downloading podcasts less. So I don't feel too bad about being away myself a little bit, and I'm going to be going away again this weekend. But I'll try not to make too big of a drawback on some things. I found out that people who listen through Libsyn haven't been getting any shows for probably about 2 months. So what that means is, if any listeners want to help out a little bit, I can show you how to help me to get those shows out there on my Libsyn feed. There's a reason why I can't do it, and I will be glad to tell you if you email me and we can discuss it. But I don't want to get into a lot of details here because it'll just bore people to death. So let's not go there. All right. Well, I actually have a whole bunch I could say about what's happening on my own retro-otr.com webpage, but I won't go into much there because I want to try to keep this short and get on with the show, because, like I said, there's some really neat things I managed to dig up. I'll try to share at least part of them today. So keep listening, and thanks for listening. Make sure you tell a friend about us, because the more you do, the more people find us, and the more people know about us, and so forth. Well, that's all I got for the moment, so I'm going to turn him back over to the Retrobots, so take it away.
Thanks, Keith. The show is already running a little longer than planned, but here's a song that I know has some personal patriotic meaning for Keith, besides being a fun song. Johnny Horton and The Battle of New Orleans.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. And we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise. If we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they're in
on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down, so we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind, and when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Now for our featured presentation.
Story behind the song. Of the Second War with Great Britain, the War of 1812, just following the raid of the British upon the city of Washington, we see a young man hurrying along the streets of Baltimore, Maryland, a look of earnest intent upon his face, determination in every vigorous stride.
Francis Key.
John Skinner, greetings.
What's the reason for this haste?
Have you heard of the plight of old Dr. William Beans?
Dr. Beans? No, what's happened?
He's under arrest on board the British flagship.
Good heavens. What for?
Well, doubtlessly acting from patriotic motives, he placed a pack of British camp followers under arrest and clapped them in jail for disturbing the peace in Upper Marlboro.
He's magistrate there, isn't he?
Yes, but that didn't seem to impress the British Navy. I've been assigned the task of trying to save the old doctor from hanging.
Hanging?
I'm quite sure it's just a threat that we must keep our hands off any British sympathizers henceforth.
You're going to the British flagship?
I am, right now.
But man, isn't that dangerous?
Dangerous? Of course it's dangerous. You can't walk into the hands of the enemy without danger.
I'll go with you.
What?
Yes, I'll go with you. You'll need someone to help you.
Very well. Thank you, John. Come along.
Francis Scott Key and John Skinner embark upon a small boat which takes them directly to the British flagship on the morning of September 6th, 1814, and are ushered into the quarters of Vice Admiral Sir George Cockburn.
Well, well, gentlemen, this is indeed an honor.
Thank you, sir.
My quarters are small, but ample for my needs until I return to England. Pray be seated. Be seated, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Now, you are Mr. Francis Scott Key?
I am, sir.
And of what service can I be to you, sir?
We seek the release of an American citizen, one Dr. William Beans, whom your forces took captive some days ago.
Oh, so that's it.
It is.
It is it? Well, well, well. I can't say that I'm surprised, gentlemen. Very well. We shall see. Lieutenant?
Aye, sir.
Bring the prisoner Beans to me here.
Aye, sir.
He's an irascible old chap, isn't he? I fear he'd make a poor naval man.
In what way, sir?
Well, he doesn't like the food, nor his bed, nor his guard. Indeed, you would have thought the Prime Minister himself were aboard the ship. The manner in which we catered to the old doctor's whims. Ah, the doctor himself. Come in, my good friend.
I am not your good friend. And I demand this outrage cease at once. I demand my release.
Oh, now, doctor, you must be patient.
Patient? Patient? Do you realize, sir, that you are detaining a citizen of the United States of America?
I realize, sir, that now I am detaining 3 citizens of the United States of America.
What?
Do you mean that you're holding Mr. Skinner and myself as prisoners?
Not as prisoners, gentlemen. As enforced guests.
Now, this is an insult.
No, not an insult, my good doctor. I am paying all of you a most generous and gracious compliment.
I do not understand.
I shall explain myself, Mr. Key. In a few days, our fleet sails under battle orders for certain maneuvers, which, if known in circles of the American Army or Navy, would doubtless fail. I know, of course, that you gentlemen are patriots of your own country, and would not hesitate to reveal any secrets you might have learned while aboard this ship. So, I detain you as guests of the British Navy.
And where is the compliment, if you please, sir?
Ah, the compliment. Yes, quite simple, Mr. Key. Instead of allowing you to return to your homes and chancing that you withhold the information, I invite you to remain here, because I know that you are patriots.
For a week, the 3 Americans are held aboard the British ship, until, on the night of September 13th, we find them on deck, talking among themselves.
I've heard news, Key.
What is it, Skinner? Quickly.
Yes, man, the suspense.
One of the sailors told me the British are attacking Fort McHenry tonight.
Fort McHenry? Then that is our destination.
I've heard, too, that while the fleet attacks the fort by sea, General Ross will be attacking North Point by land.
And Major Armistead with a handful of men at the fort. A small wonder Sir George detained us with such information floating about.
Yes, and here we are. 3 able-bodied Americans helpless to lend assistance to our country. I'm going below. I will not stand here to see my country fired upon without being able to lift a finger in defense.
And poor Dr. Beans, still the militant.
Oh, the night is black. I wish we could see.
All we shall see, John, is the fire from these cannons and the answer from Fort McHenry.
Until dawn.
Yes, until dawn.
Oh, when will it begin?
Not impatient, John.
No. Just uneasy. This waiting.
Wait no more, John. It's beginning.
Oh, what will they do at Fort McHenry?
Probably return the fire. Yes. There. Skinner, can you see anything at the fort?
No.
You cannot see the flag by any chance, can you?
No. Wait. Yes.
Yes. Yes, I see it too.
What are you doing?
Writing.
On an old envelope? What are you writing?
A little verse.
I didn't know you were a poet.
No, not a poet, John. Just a writer of verses.
Oh, how can you write under these conditions?
Let the thought suit the inspiration.
What? What do you mean?
Wait. I have another line. The rocket's red glare. Oh, yes. The bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night. Our flag is still there.
Through the night, the 2 Americans stand watching, watching, watching. Then, toward dawn...
Oh, this awful night.
It's most over, I think, John. Yes, look. There in the east, a faint glow of light.
Where? Oh, yes. I see it.
We shall soon know the fate of those poor devils at the fort.
Yes, soon. Let us hope they withstood the fire.
We'll do more than hope. We'll pray.
Do you see anything yet, Francis?
My eyes are weary from watching. At times I think I can see, and then I realize it's just imagination.
Look. Is that imagination?
No. By heaven, you're right. Armistead has held them off. The flag is still there.
A few days later, after the three enforced guests had been released from Admiral Coburn's flagship, Francis Scott Key was in his study when the door burst open and his two friends, Skinner and Dr. Beans, rushed in.
Francis. Francis, look. See what they've done.
Yes, it's wonderful, young man. You've done the country a service which the people can never forget.
What do you mean? Sit down.
Sit down, he says. I couldn't sit down now if my life depended upon it. I'm thrilled.
Well, what in the world are you talking about?
Look.
Why, it's my verse. Printed.
Yes. I hope you won't be angry with me, Francis. But I showed your poem, the copy you made for me, to the editor of the newspaper. He had it printed, and thousands of copies of it have been distributed all over Baltimore.
I'm highly honored, John. My thanks to you.
But this is far greater than any of us can realize now, Mr. Key.
What do you mean, Doctor?
I mean simply this. There's not the slightest doubt in my mind, but that this poem of yours will cement the faltering hopes of the people. You know how the public mind has been wavering as to the wisdom of this war. I thought to do my share by my rash act a few days ago, but I was going about it with malice in my heart. You, young man, you have looked out over the bitter forces of this horrible war. You've scanned the horizon far above the hate of conflict and have seen aright. Francis Key, you have created the masterpiece which will inspire the American people to go on, to fight the war to the end, to strive with more vigor for the great final victory we must win.
I didn't create this poem, gentlemen. It was born of the union of pity for those who have fallen and my innate love for my country. If the people can be brought closer together by it, I'm happy. I've not been able to enter the war actively. And if this can be of service, if the people will remember it, I shall be immeasurably happy.
Oh, say, can you see?
Hi, this is Keith, your host at the Retro Radio Podcast. And here's one way how you can support the podcast. Visit our homepage, retro-otr.com. And over on the right-hand sidebar, you will see our Retro Radio tip jar. There's an icon of a piggy bank, and right below it is a PayPal button. Just click on the PayPal button, make a donation.
How much is it, mister?
That'll be a total of $210.
$210?
Plus 3% sales tax.
I don't think that's funny.
So click it today.
Oh, I'll be glad to.
And make your donation, and we thank you for your support.
61.
Keith and the Retrobot.
Program presented by
the Retro Radio Podcast.
Feeling low.
Feeling tense.
These hate words are common sense.
Listen
to
a podcast.
To be your level best.
Listen
to
a
podcast.
To be your level best.
Your level best. That's just how you'll feel when you light up a
podcast.
Because
the Retro Radio Podcast
picks you up when you're low, calms you down when you're tense. Yes, friend.
Retro Radio
will put you on the right level to feel and do your level best. It's important to know that fine
podcasting
can do this for you.
Retro Radio Podcast. Retro-OTR.com. Retro Radio Podcast. Retro-OTR.com.
Smooth, mild, thoroughly enjoyable
podcasting.
So next time you buy
a podcatcher,
remember that
Retro Radio Podcast
will put you on the lucky level where you feel and do your level best. Where things seem right and are right because you feel right. Yes?
Listen to a Retro Radio Podcast
to feel your level best.
Now, get ready for the second feature.
Of every great conflict between peoples and nations, there have arisen songs, melodies which have sprung from the very root of war, as though to belie the depressing grief, the heavy tragedy waiting the hearts of those who fight the battles and those who are left behind to bear the burdens of home. Strangely, we have been left as a heritage from the American Revolution but one song which has remained to this day. Doubtless there were others, but this one, and this one only, has lived to be sung, to be whistled, to be hummed in our own time. What was its origin? No one has yet been able to ferret out the facts of the actual writing of the melody or words. Like Topsy, they just grew. There are, of course, those among you who have never visited the peaceful, languid, albeit historic, estate once occupied by those two fine figures of early American history, George and Martha Washington. But at least you have seen pictures of Mount Vernon, surrounded by trees and broad expanses of verdant, cultivated countryside, overlooking the beauties of the winding Potomac shoreline. One day, early in the spring of the year 1775, Martha Washington stood watching the approach of two horses.
Ezekiel, take those horses to the stable.
Yes, my boy.
George, wherever have you been? Your breeches are wringing wet.
Yes, Martha, I think I'll change them. I want no more of those head colds.
But where have you been?
If you'll excuse me, Martha.
George?
Oh, the breeches. Yes, well, my dear, I fell in the creek.
Fell in the creek? You, the greatest horseman in Virginia, if not in all the colony?
Here comes Ezekiel. Ask him the details. I'm so fearful of another head cold, my dear.
Oh, yes, George, of course. Change your breeches at once.
Thank you, Martha.
Ezekiel?
Yes?
Come here.
Yes?
How did Colonel Washington's breeches get wet?
Oh, he fell in...
Never mind that. That's not the truth, Ezekiel. And I want the truth.
Oh, yes. Well, down by the creek, the colonel found a scalawag that's been poaching his canvasback ducks, ma'am.
Oh.
The colonel told the man to stop, but the man attempted to ride away in a small boat, and all the time pointing a musket at the colonel. And the colonel, ma'am, he jumped off from his horse, and he waded right into the creek after
Never mind, Ezekiel. I'll hear the rest later. Here comes Colonel Washington.
Yeah.
Well, George.
Did you receive the details from Ezekiel?
Oh, George. You've always detested and loathed poachers, haven't you?
Yes, Martha, yes. Poachers of all kinds. Whether for ducks, territory, or monies.
Is the situation becoming more serious?
No, I fear so, my dear. So serious that the deepening rift between England and her colonies must ultimately end in war.
George, no.
I fear it is inevitable. I must attend the session of the Assembly within a fortnight, and I can see no alternative but forcing the issue. Patrick Henry was right. It is liberty or death.
Later, just before a session of the Virginia Assembly, Washington and several of his co-members stand within a small anteroom, awaiting the call to order, when Patrick Henry enters hurriedly.
Well, Mr. Henry, you're worried. What has happened?
Colonel Washington. Gentlemen, it has come.
War?
Yes, war.
War.
What is it? What do you mean?
There's been an engagement between colonists, just farmers, blacksmiths, workmen, between them and British regulars.
Where?
At Concord in Lexington.
Massachusetts again carries the banner of liberty. Come, gentlemen, let us go into session. The time for action has arrived.
Yes, we shall.
By authority vested in me by the people of Virginia, by the divine blessing of the Almighty God, and through the benign dominion of His Sovereign Majesty, George, King of England.
Mr. Speaker!
Does the gentleman from Fairfax County feel he must interrupt the regularly recognized ritual of opening of the assembly?
Mr. Speaker! Gentlemen, I recognize the authority of the people of Virginia. I recognize beyond all else the blessing of the Almighty God. But from this moment, henceforth, I will not recognize the sovereignty of the King of England. Word has but now come to us of the hostile engagement between our brothers in a northern colony and soldiers of the Crown of England. There can be but one question before this assembly. I deem it probable that those here assembled are aware of that question. Does it not appear as clear as the sun in its meridian brightness that there is a regular, systematic plan formed to fix the right and practice of taxation upon us? Is there anything to be expected from petitioning after this? Is not the attack upon the liberty and property of the people of Boston a plain and self-evident proof of what the House of Commons of the Crown of England are aiming at? Ought we not then to put our virtue and fortitude to the severest test? Have we not witnessed unexampled testimony of the most despotic system of tyranny that ever was practiced in a free government? Shall we after this whine and cry for relief when we have already tried it in vain?
No! No!
At this time, when our lordly masters in Great Britain will be satisfied with nothing less than the deprivation of American freedom, something must be done to avert that stroke and maintain the liberty which we have derived from our ancestors. As for myself, I will raise 1,000 men, subsist them at my own expense, and march them to the relief of Boston. Gentlemen, we're on our way to Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Continental Congress and what?
Mr. Henry, you know as well as I do, as well as Mr. Edmonton here knows, that our trip to Philadelphia will end in war, rebellion, revolution. Nothing we can do now can avert it.
Except submission.
Submission?
Mr. Edmonton, there's not an American alive who will submit.
George.
Oh, Martha, my dear. Farewell. I shall write you by post from Philadelphia.
And may the word be good, George.
I hope so.
I know what you mean, George. Nothing now can avert war. Well, then, let it come. And let all patriots be prepared for the good fight. Goodbye, George. My prayers are with you.
During that historic, epoch-making session of the Continental Congress in Carpenter's Hall, Philadelphia, the patriot John
and
Adams
I asked you,
holds
Mr.
the floor.
Speaker, to look upon the condition of the colonial armies at this moment. Men are coming and going at will. These men of ours, these farmers and mechanics, they are not an army. There are no regular enlistments, no regular uniforms, no regularly appointed and recognized officers. Confusion is everywhere. I say to you, there is but one man who is qualified by past service, by intonation, by a glorious foresight to freedom to take command of our army and so organize a frantic patriotism to coordinated action.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Patrick Henry.
If the gentleman from Massachusetts, Mr. John Adams, speaks of solid formation and sound judgment, there is unquestionably the greatest man of our choice upon this floor, Colonel George Washington.
You are leaving the Congress, Colonel Washington?
Oh, Mr. Samuel Adams. No, no, I'm not leaving. I am but waiting. My name has been spoken.
Ah, yes, I know. My cousin, John Adams, is recommending you as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. Yes, John Hancock thinks he should be appointed, but he is not the man. We must have a delegate from Virginia appointed to command our army. It's politically important.
Politically?
You will command our armies. There's no doubt of that. And, Colonel, as the siege proceeds, you will find that political maneuvers have their place, even in a war of independence.
Colonel, you are the commander-in-chief of the army.
Oh, commander-in-chief. Very well, the task is ours, and we shall win.
Next day, George Washington sat upon his famous stallion underneath the historic elm tree and accepted the command of the Continental Army. Thereupon, accompanied by a brilliant escort headed by General Schuyler and General Lee, he rode on toward the north, cheered at every hand by farmers and their wives. Finally, only 20 miles out from Philadelphia, an exhausted, sweating rider approaches the small company, reins in his horse before Washington.
You bear news?
Aye, sir. Dire news. Who are you, sir?
George Washington, Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army.
Thank God, sir. We are saved.
What do you mean, man?
Another engagement has occurred between the English and the men of Boston at Bunker Hill.
Did the militia fight?
Fight? Aye, that they did. To the men.
Then the liberties of the country are safe.
Forward to Boston! Forward!
Presented by the Retro Radio Podcast, retro-otr.com.
All right. So long.